So yes, rectal cancer imaging, it's very important because it really stratifies treatment. Let me see how I can move forward. I have no disclosures. This is an important landmark study, I think. It's we try to stratify patients into a differentiated treatment by using MR only. So we identify the individual risk factors for local recurrence, the mesorectal fascia, nodes, T stage, the height of the tumor, and subcategorize the patients into the good, the bad, and the ugly risk. And they had a differentiated treatment from only surgery, total mesorectal excision, to a very intensive chemoradiotherapy and resection. Let me see, I have to do like this to push forward. Yes, that's better. The long-term outcome showed a very good local control with less than 3% local recurrence rate nowadays from 40 in the past. However, distant metastasis remains a problem. So at the moment, MRI is mandatory in the standard workup of rectal cancer, and it's already included in guidelines from both sides of the Atlantic. The European guidelines is that published by the ESGAR. You can download this structured reporting template, which will give you all the very important issues or factors that you really need to include in your report. We do use this, and I must be honest that it is really helpful because you're faster, but also you don't miss the important points that the clinicians really want to hear. So many of you who do use rectal cancer, you know that it's very easy to see the mesorectal fascia and therefore understand that this tumor is invading the fascia. We also know that with a high resolution, and I mean high resolution is 3 millimeter, we can see the tumor that is limited to the bowel wall. So if you really see this hypointensity of the bowel wall, the predictive value is 80% for a tumor limited to the bowel wall, or although MR cannot differentiate between T1 and T2. More difficult it is if we see this tumor that has desmoplastic reaction. It could be a T2 with desmoplasia or a T3. We don't know that. In the past, that was a critical issue because T3 would go for preoperative treatment while T2 can go straight for surgery. But since this subgroup analysis of the Mercury study from the UK showed that the T2, T3AB tumors, T3AB meaning a less than 5 millimeter extension from the bowel wall, these tumors is a good prognostic group that do well without preoperative radiotherapy, and the local recurrence rate are very low, down to 3%. There's also a role for restaging after chemoradiotherapy because it can change the treatment plan. So this huge tumor would undergo an excentration because of the ingrowth invasion in the bladder wall. But after chemoradiotherapy, we can show the surgeon that the tumor has retracted from the bladder and now a TME can be performed. So really a change in treatment plan. However, you have to know that it's not always easy to predict invasion after chemoradiotherapy in the margins. So we have seen in a study that if you see a tumor that is adjacent to the prostate and after chemoradiotherapy, there's still a thick fibrosis, then it's like 50-50 chance that this fibrosis would still harbor tumor cells. Well, after chemoradiotherapy, if you see that this tumor here has retracted from the mesorectal fascia, But you see this little stranding. Now, stranding after chemoradiotherapy in the fat, a sort of a dirty fat sign, it always correlates with a free margin. So these are the patterns that you have to remember if you're looking at these images. And why is it important? Because if you see this, you could really tell the surgeon, well, I'm not sure, but you can do a wider excision instead of going and cutting through the mesorectal resection margin. It's also important that you perform in the low rectal cancer and coronal plane angle parallel to the anal canal. And it's important to describe in details how the tumor is invading the anal canal. So for example, this tumor is going down and you have to describe that the tumor is invading part of the internal sphincter, but here even more. On this side, it looks as if it's free, you're not sure. And on this side, you're not sure either. It is very close to the pelvic floor. So you have to describe this because it's very important for the surgical planning and also for the radiotherapy planning. So this patient would undergo chemoradiotherapy. And what happens after chemoradiotherapy usually is very important because this patient would go an a rectal amputation if we could not show the post-chemoradiotherapy images. But because we are reassessing 8 weeks after completion of the chemoradiotherapy, we can see how the tumor is not in the anal canal anymore, has retracted. There is now a free fat plane, so you're sure that it has retracted from the pelvic floor muscles, and you also see this this fibrotic wall over here, which again, you don't know whether it is a complete response or only fibrosis, or there's still a tumor inside, but at least you can tell the surgeon what you see. And with this, all of a sudden, the change in treatment could be from a rectal amputation into a TME with a low anastomosis. So really make the difference for the patient. Nowadays, for many centers, it's already standard that after chemoradiotherapy, we assess the tumor and in 30%, there will be a complete response. And I'm talking about the locally advanced rectal cancer. So an organ preservation is already part of the treatment that can be offered to the patients with a complete response. And that is because of this landmark study that was published in the Lancet. It's a long-term outcome of patients with a clinical complete response after preoperative chemoradiotherapy. These patients were registered in an international registry database, and at around 8,000 patients registered, they performed an analysis, and as you can see from this survival curve, that this treatment is safe. However, it should be done in a center with an experience and dedication for this treatment, including a state-of-the-art endoscopy and MRI, meaning you really need to have an expert team looking and at these patients. The main questions for us radiologists will be, is there any residual disease on the imaging after chemoradiotherapy? Are the nodes, the remaining nodes, still positive? And can we, during the surveillance, early detect regrowth? Now, if we're only looking at the T2 weighted imaging, we know from meta-analysis that we are not good at all. The sensitivity is lower than just tossing a coin, only 20%. However, the specificity is high. So that's why in the restaging protocol, it is highly recommended to include a diffusion-weighted imaging because diffusion can differentiate between complete and partial response. And I'm only talking about the restricted diffusion on the B1000, B800 value and not about the ADC, because that is not so much reliable in rectal cancer. So as I told you, diffusion can detect complete response, but in fact, the power is to exclude a complete response, a very high negative predictive value, meaning that if we see a restricted diffusion signal on the B800 or B1000, we are very good in identifying a residual disease with a negative predictive value of around 90%. But you even become very sensitive in picking up the complete responders if you know what to look for. So you look at certain patterns. For example, if you see the semicircular tumors, after chemoradiotherapy, they respond with a semicircular fibrosis. Now, these are two different patients. You don't really know how they respond, which are complete responders and which have residual disease. So their diffusion helps us, because if the diffusion does not show any signal, that corresponds with a complete response. If it does show a residual disease or a signal, restricted diffusion, a focal diffusion signal, then in up to 90%, it is very accurate for detection of residual tumor. So that is with this semicircular pattern. If, however, we have a circular tumor that reacts with a circular fibrosis and it's really ugly, then it's becoming very difficult. So the upper patient respond with a circular fibrosis and diffusion signal scattered all over the fibrosis, and that is associated with residual tumor. With the lower patient, we really made a mistake, because we thought, okay, this is fibrotic, but the diffusion does not show any restriction, so this must be complete response. But then it happened to be a residual tumor. So the message is that if you see a circular fibrosis on T2-weighted imaging, this the diffusion images are not reliable. There is still an 80% risk for residual tumor in these kind of patterns, regardless of the diffusion signal. Now, there are, of course, also artifacts, and we all know them. These kind of tumors that respond with fibrosis, often you see on the diffusion, these kind of, we call that Mercedes-Benz star sign. And if you see that, you know that it's luminal fluid, shine through artifact. However, a residual disease always appear as a U-shape and always on the inner side of the fibrosis, so on the luminal side. So if you know that, that helps. So diffusion, really, it hinges upon the protocol, and we've tried everything, and the best is to get rid of the air. And the way we do that now is to perform the MR before we do the endoscopy. And we give the patient a Microlax, a little enema. He inserts it himself. It's patient friendly. And there, we have even a loo in the MR's unit. And so he can empty the bowel, and you can see how what happens with the same patient after the enema. You can see how the air artifact all of a sudden disappear. So we could reduce the air artifacts from 25% to 5%. So that really helps us to get the best results. But so diffusion is not the only thing that we look at. Luckily, we have the endoscopy, and in fact, the endoscopy is better than imaging, with an area under the Rock curve of 0.88 compared to 0.8. But if we combine all four, that's the best. So what we really need to do is to look at all the four modalities, clinical exam, endoscopy. I don't trust myself or my own image if I do not have looked at the endoscopic image myself. So what I do is I look at the diffusion. And if I don't see a signal, I correlate that with the T2-weighted image and then look at the endoscopy. So if everything matches like this, this is the image of a clinical complete response. And with the cases, I will show you why, how important that is to have a multidisciplinary look at the tools. When do we need to look at the to assess the complete responders? Usually 8 weeks after chemoradiotherapy. However, what happens is, this is in our own cohort, 170 patients, we can see that 100 had this clinical complete response images on imaging and endoscopy and underwent a watch and wait. However, in around 70 patients, we had an ulcer still on endoscopy. So then we go for a restaging 8 weeks after that, so a second restaging, and you can see what happens. A big proportion underwent or became a complete response. So the ulcer heals. So it takes sometimes longer than 8 to 10 weeks to achieve a complete response. And you have to restage again at 16 weeks. And this is the example of it. So there is this ulcer, we call that a near complete response. At on diffusion, we see this, I don't know, maybe it's an artifact, maybe it's really restricted diffusion of residual disease, we just don't know. But the clinicians then wants to just reassess, and you can see what happens after 2 months. It can turn into an image that really is a typical image of a complete response. So that is why sometimes waiting at the test of time is very important. Now, in the Lancet study of the registry database, we found that during the follow-up, the regrowth like this one occur within the 2 years, and around 25% were regrowth, and they occurred within the 2 years. So we know that we should really look very intensively and follow them up during the first 2 years. But as you can see here, the majority of the regrowth occurred on the luminal side. So the endoscopy will pick them up. But in 3%, apparently, our imaging can help. So this is our follow-up schedule. We follow them 3 monthly with MRI and endoscopy. And in year 2, we follow them 3 monthly with endoscopy, but we reduce the frequency of MRI to 6 monthly. So we don't need to do repetitive MRI with endoscopy. And at year 3 and to 5, we follow them with annual endoscopy and MRI. So this is about the schedule that is optimal, but we still need to investigate the true real schedule, and therefore we do many prospective studies to look into that. What is our role in the active surveillance of the patients with watch and wait? Diffusion is not better than endoscopy. It's still endoscopy which picks up the regrowth. But this is a study recently published by Mark Golub from MSKCC, very good study. In the discordant findings where diffusion is positive, is suspicious, endoscopy is negative, if you reassess 3 months later, the picture suddenly becomes a diffusion positive, endoscopy positive in 20%. So in 1/5 of the patients, the diffusion, in fact, was already alerting us that there's something going on, and the diffusion was really correct in and ahead of the endoscopy in predicting a regrowth that will appear very soon. Now, this is the daily example where you see the fibrosis of a patient at 3 months in follow-up for a watch and wait. At 18 months, in fact, the fibrosis has not changed on T2 weighted imaging. Endoscopy, you don't know. Maybe this is something or just edema. If you look at the MRI, there are several spots of signal. Now, this is the signal of the Mercedes-Benz star. So that is intraluminal, shine through artifact. But then you're left with this signal in the fibrosis. So we follow them and the signal persists, sustains until at 25 months, it's still there and endoscopy also picks up the regrowth. So this is the example that a diffusion can be positive while endoscopy is not convincing for a regrowth. 1/5, it occurs like that. Now, a little bit into the future. What is going on at this moment with treatment? So I was telling you a lot about organ preservation because in fact, in rectal cancer expert centers, that's already part of the standard, I would say. So local excision for the T1, that's organ preservation. For the locally advanced rectal cancer with complete response after chemoradiotherapy, again, offer the patient organ preservation. It's a shared decision-making with the patients and they know exactly what they want. Some patients do not want this and they go for surgery, but many already know that this really could make the difference in the functions after the treatment. Now, what are we heading for? We are going for organ preservation also for the smaller, the earlier stage, the stage 2-3, instead of only locally advanced rectal cancer. I showed you this study from the very first slide, where we said, okay, we could obtain with MR stratification excellent local control, but distant control remains a challenge. And that was because the chemotherapy was given after the surgery, meaning that because of the postoperative morbidity, many patients could not complete the chemo cycles. So the trend is to move the chemo upfront before the surgery. So with the intention that they will complete the chemo cycles and we will tackle the micrometastasis because that had been the problem so far. We could not control the survival rates. Now, this is just recently, you can see Lancet Oncology, January 2021, a very good study that also is practice changing. In locally advanced rectal cancer, the standard treatment was chemoradiotherapy, surgery, and chemotherapy. The patients with locally advanced rectal cancer were randomized between the standard and the experimental arm, which is a short course of radiotherapy, 5x5, a long waiting time before surgery, and in the long waiting time, we give the chemo cycles. We call that the rapido scheme. And that shows that, yes, we can control the distant metastasis better, favorable results for the experimental arm with respect to distant metastasis. And surprisingly, the number of complete responders in the experimental arm was higher than in the standard arm. Maybe it is also due to the long waiting time because we wait longer than the 8 weeks in the standard arm because we are giving all these cycles. So that is now going for, okay, pushing the boundaries because we want to have more complete response. And this study also from the Memorial Sloan Kettering, they already showed that the chemoradiotherapy and the total mesorectal excision in between increasing number of Volvox cycles means an increasing number of complete response. So the trend is to really go for more complete responders. So we're going for organ preservation for the earlier stage. That is in the US, total neoadjuvant treatment. So chemoradiotherapy, chemo surgery. And chemo can be given as a sandwich or chemo before chemoradiotherapy for the stage 2-3 rectal cancer. So very aggressive treatment, and they are now performing the OPERA trial, randomizing stage 2-3 rectal cancer between induction chemo, meaning chemo before chemoradiotherapy, or consolidation chemo, that means chemo after chemoradiotherapy. And I just show you this because the future for us is that we're going to stage to the imaging, the role of imaging will only increase and not decrease. Not only evaluation after chemoradiotherapy, but also evaluation after chemotherapy at different time points. That is our future. And our future will also be even smaller and smaller and smaller tumors like this one, less than 3 centimeters, very early stage. The Star Trek trial, also running in the UK, by the way. It randomizes patients who prefer to have an organ preservation with these very small tumors. So it used to be TME surgery, but now they prefer organ preservation. We randomize between two different radiotherapy schemes. You don't need to remember that. But again, the message is that we are going to evaluate response at different time points to see whether the patient is a good responding patient, and we can push forward the boundaries and we can go for more radiotherapy to assess and to obtain a complete response. So if we are going for a lot of aggressive treatment, not only chemoradiotherapy for the locally advanced tumors, and they happen to go to undergo a complete response, we are also going for chemoradiotherapy for this kind of tumors that in the past went in for immediate surgery. That means that we have to try and predict those who are going to respond, because you don't want that these patients will not respond to chemo, to the radiotherapy, and then end up with surgery anyway, and have the risk for postoperative morbidity and mortality because of the surgery after preoperative treatment. So that is the challenge for us, to predict response. That is where we have to work on in research now. We have to know already before we start the treatment, which are the tumors that are not going to respond. And I think perfusion has a role in that. I told you that the residual disease always occur on the luminal side. Now, if you look at the perfusion map of a tumor, it's always central. It's on the luminal side is the high angiogenic activity. So maybe perfusion could help us. And this is a study that was recently published, and they looked into the signal enhancement curve and the semi-quantitative analysis and the quantitative analysis. And I believe that the semi-quantitative analysis are more reproducible, and you can see how the time to peak enhancement could differentiate between complete and non-complete responders and the K-trans also. And a review by our group showed indeed that there are already not strong, but already some weak evidence to indicate that it perfusion could be the way to go to predict response. But of course, you want to be more specific, you want to be more precise. And the radiotherapy is already getting into very precise dose calculation, because they also have MRI, they have now the MR LINAC. So they want to know from us exactly which regions need high doses and which regions we can do with less dose. And that voxel-based multiparametric imaging is in fact ideal. But whether we can do that, future has to tell. This is already a Chinese study who looked into a voxel-based analysis of perfusion, diffusion, and T2-weighted imaging, and they found extremely high area under the ROC curve by combining all parameters for the prediction of a complete response. But I have to be honest, these are only the first step. So really a lot of work needs to be done. We looked with the endpoint, the TRG1-2, that means the complete response or near complete response. We looked whether the baseline imaging, MR, diffusion or PET parameters could predict those group of good responding patients. And we found that the clinical T stage and the MR parameters on T2 weighted imaging was already very good, performing very well in predicting the response. And PET parameters did not improve that, and nor did diffusion signal or ADC parameters improve. So there is some message that multiparametric imaging is good, but we don't know which parameters are the most predictive, and we need to work on that. So artificial intelligence, again, a lot of data already appearing in literature, but it's still in the baby steps, I can say, and we cannot really rely on it in this phase. So the radiomics, for example, we did publish our own data, 133 diffusion weighted imaging, and we found stable radiomics features of higher heterogeneity that had an area under the ROC curve in the training set of 0.71 and in the validation set of 0.77. But if we look at the data in literature in rectal cancer, yes, there are already, you know, like everything goes points at the same direction, heterogeneity features, but you know, there are studies with figures that are too good to be true. So we really need to work further in this field if we believe that this is going to be the way to go. So take home message for this lecture. There are more things that I would like to teach you, but let's go to the cases if I still have some time. Yes. Take home message is MRI can stratify treatment. Nodal staging, I'm going to dive deeper into this with a case, remains a challenge. MR restaging is very important, but describe in details the tumor extent to plan the surgical approach, and only if in your center organ preservation is being considered, then always include diffusion as part of the restaging protocol. The combined assessment for clinical complete response is clinical exam, endoscopy, and diffusion MRI. Now, ongoing research in the rectal cancer field is organ preservation for the stage 2-3 tumors. And for us, the challenge to identify tools that can predict response. So if I may move, Fiona, to some cases, and what time do you want me to finish?
That's great. Well, we normally finish the whole session at 6 p.m. So a couple of cases and some questions would be great. Thank you so much.
Okay. So I will show some cases because I want to point, I want to give you some messages, and the cases are selected because these are repetitively the difficult issues that I encounter when I go and teach centers. So for example, this one, we have a mid-high rectal tumor. So there's no, I mean, I'm going to show you only some, you know, I'm not going to show you the pucks. I wish I could do that, but then the time is too short. So just scenarios. So we have this tumor, mid and high tumor, right? So we do sagittal image, we look at where it is located and then look at the actual image. And I showed you this case already, that is a T3AB. And there are little notes like that. That is daily case, right? So 12 small notes, two are suspicious. What would be the treatment? Well, this is an intermediate risk tumor. And you have these choice of treatment, immediate TME, 5x5, the rapidoskin, chemo and delayed TME, or chemo radiotherapy and TME, or the total neoadjuvant treatment is chemo radiotherapy, chemo and TME. You see the difference, right? This is short course and this is chemo radiotherapy, so more intensive radiotherapy. In the past, this patient would undergo preoperative treatment, radiotherapy, chemoradiotherapy. Nowadays, we know from that study that I showed you that this patient had a good prognosis. And even though we tell them that two nodes are suspicious, these patients can do well without preoperative treatment. So the treatment here would be TME. However, if this would be a scenario where you would say that eight nodes are small, but they are suspicious, then this patient would all of a sudden undergo a preoperative treatment. Would it then it would be the choice between the preoperative radiotherapy or preoperative radiotherapy with something like chemo. But chemo in this patient, it is not that high risk that we want to tackle the distant metastasis. It's not that. So and chemo is maybe over treatment in this. So we would choose for either the chemo radiotherapy or the short course 5x5 followed by surgery. Now, that is why I follow this, and this is in the guidelines. It is different. It is a different approach of how you look at nodes. It's not that, am I really correlating my MR imaging? Am I exactly right? And is there 100% correlation with histology? It's not that. Because in rectal cancer, you have 70% of positive nodes that are less than 5 millimeters. So you cannot even tell whether this is a positive or negative node. So what I do is that I want a risk-adapted nodal staging. So if you have no nodes, of course, it's C N0. If you have big nodes, it's an N plus. But if you have nodes that are in the borderline 5 to 7, 6 millimeter, then you need to see at least two of the criteria, round shape, irregular border, or heterogeneous signal, before you call the node positive. If you go to the very tiny nodes, less than 5 millimeter, I want you to see all three criteria. And then immediately your response will be, but that's impossible because I don't see any criteria. I cannot see it because the resolution is too low. And there is exactly what I'm saying. In the past, these kind of nodes were, because we were anxious that we missed positive nodes, we just tell the team, okay, irradiate because these nodes might be positive. And then we had over irradiation in 40% of the cases. So we don't want overstaging, and we want to keep the threshold as low as possible and deal with the nodes from a different perspective. And that is why it is important to have look, how many nodes do you think it's suspicious, and have a glance like how many nodes are there in total, and tell them how many what is their proportion. So their risk adaptation is made also by the entire team and not based on imaging and its correlation with pathology. So that is my message for the nodes. Then case two is another message. Okay, this is a tumor, that is a T3AB, three out of 10 nodes are suspicious, 6 to 7 millimeter in size. There is no EMVI, no involvement of the mesorectal fascia by the tumor, but there is one of the suspicious nodes is adjacent to the mesorectal fascia. So the question always is, where do I need to measure the distance to the mesorectal fascia? Is that this distance or is it this distance? And the studies have shown that yes, there is of course a risk for local recurrence that is related to the nodal distance to the mesorectal fascia, but it's not as high as the tumor. So the contributing factor of the tumor and its distance to the mesorectal fascia is much higher than that of the node. So yes, you need to still assess the distance from the tumor to the mesorectal fascia. And that is the tumor, that is the distance that determines the risk for local recurrence. But does it mean that you have to ignore this node? No, you have to tell this surgeon that there is a node close by because he can then make a wider excision and be careful with his surgery. So in this patient, there's no EMVI. We would not necessarily go for a chemo in the scheme. So this patient could go for a chemoradiotherapy or in fact, nowadays already a TME only. Because I told you 3 out of 10 risk-adapted staging, it's not a high risk. It's an intermediate risk. Nowadays, it would be TME. But before, this patient was from the past, so they gave this patient chemoradiotherapy because of the nodes. So the patient underwent chemoradiotherapy, and what happens? This patient had fibrosis, and at endoscopy, no tumor at all. So the image of a scar tissue of a complete response. Now, the question is, wow, there is a signal. However, the signal is not at the spot of the fibrosis. So it is not a suspicious residual disease on MR. So this patient has a complete response. And that is why this patient had a clinical complete response after chemoradiotherapy and is included in the watch and wait. And what is the lesson to learn? That it's about location, location, location. Match the diffusion signal with the T2-weighted imaging and always correlate with endoscopy. The other case is, again, a high tumor. And on the anterior side, above the peritoneal reflection, this is the axial image. High anterior T3AB, 3 centimeter, 12 small nodes, 1 suspicious, intermediate risk, right? Could go for immediate surgery. What I want you to know is this. Above the peritoneal reflection, there's no mesorectal fascia. So do not describe this tumor as invading on the anterior side, the mesorectal fascia, because that means that you have not studied your anatomy. Above the peritoneal reflection, the mesorectum is immediately adjacent to the peritoneal cavity. So if there is a tumor that is invading the peritoneal cavity or the peritoneal fascia, then it is not in the mesorectal fascia, it's directly into the peritoneal cavity. So remember that. Then message number 2 is do not overstage this tumor as invasion into a peritoneum. That is what we have been doing there. And I think you should be very careful and look at the actual image and see if you can identify the bowel wall on the anterior side. Because usually it's there, but it's if you only look at the sagittal image, you are not going to be accurate. So really look into all planes. What happens if the tumor would invade only the peritoneal reflection, like this one? Even that is not a reason for chemoradiotherapy, because the surgeon can still operate, do a TME, and go for a wider excision, so take away a little bit more of the peritoneum. So that is what I wanted you to know. So in this patient, it would be a TME because it's high, intermediate, not so many nodes. However, the patient said, I'm keen to avoid surgery. I don't want the stoma. So this patient had neoadjuvant treatment with the goal to go for organ preservation. So this patient underwent the chemoradiotherapy. And after the chemoradiotherapy, there is this ulcer. And this is the patient that I already showed you. And this diffusion image, this patient was reassessed and had this image of a clinical complete response. The patient was followed in a surveillance, in a watch and wait. And you can see how the patient was okay for 6 months. And at 11 months, all of a sudden, it is diffusion positive, and it's sustained over there while there is no change in the endoscopy. So this is exactly what Mark Gallup wrote about. If you have a discordant diffusion positive finding, endoscopy negative finding, then in 1/5, it will turn out to be a regrowth in 1/5 of these cases. This is exactly that example. So yes, regrowth occurred. Now, I think this is, yes, the last case. The last case is something new that will be included in the new guidelines. It's not yet there. There is a recent data that helped us to look at the lateral nodes outside the mesorectum. We tend to forget that. One of the my first mistakes, and my husband always showed that I overlooked a big lateral node, and then the patient recurred with a nodal regrowth. So that is very difficult because we know everything about the mesorectal nodes, but we don't know what happens with the extramesorectal node because no one has ever taken it out on a standard basis. So this study has looked into 1,200 locally advanced rectal cancer and found on the baseline MRI 58% lateral nodes outside the mesorectum. At staging MRI, these lateral nodes in a big proportion, I think 16% was more than 7 millimeter. When after restaging MRI, the lateral nodes become 4 millimeter in the internal iliac and 6 millimeter in the obturator, then it appeared that the 5-year lateral nodal recurrence was much higher without dissecting these nodes, much higher than with lateral node dissection. So you already know what happens is that the clinicians will ask us, tell us what happens with the lateral nodes. And this is a pain because we need to know another anatomy. First of all, you have to remember the cutoffs, 7, 4, and 6 millimeter, but we need to know the other anatomy and the compartment of the anatomy. So we need to know where is the internal iliac compartment and the obturator compartment and the external iliac compartment. And this blue spot is over the internal iliac. The border of the internal iliac is the lateral part of the internal iliac artery. So if you follow this, follow it, obturator, internal iliac compartment, follow it, you can see that it's going in out in the lower sciatic. You can see that it goes away in the sciatic foramen. And I've shown you, meanwhile, on the way back, I've shown you these notes. So now they want to know from us, where is it located? So if you know the compartmental anatomy, you know that this node is lateral from the internal iliac artery, so in the obturator compartment. And in the obturator, the critical cutoff is 6 millimeters. So now they want to know from us that anatomy. And this one is in the obturator, but you know, on the border is a line. So now what I'm teaching the radiologists in the Netherlands to look at it in a different way. And really it opens up a new dimension. I think it's important if you look at that, but do we know whether the morphological criteria works in this? We don't know because we do not have those studies, but what we know is the sizes matters, and those are the size cutoffs that you need to use. This is a big note, but it is in the obturator compartment. So this was my last case, I think. Sorry it took there, but this is the take home. Intermediate risk. Remember, good local control of TME, do not overcall nodes as positive, high anterior tumor, there's no mesorectal fascia above the peritoneal reflection, do not overcall peritoneal invasion, organ preservation, include diffusion, but it is the combination of all the tools that is the most accurate. In 20% of the discordant images, you will find diffusion to be ahead of the endoscopy to detect regrowth. And of the lateral nodes, it's very new. Remember the important numbers, the cutoff, 7 on the primary imaging, 6 and 4. That's my story. I hope I wasn't too fast.